Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Hello and welcome to the Success Is Podcast, where we dive into the stories of extraordinary individuals who have redefined success on their own terms. I'm your host, Phil Portman, and today we have an absolutely incredible guest joining us. She's an award-winning international bestseller author, a powerhouse author coach, a strategic business mind who has helped entrepreneurs around the world elevate their brand through storytelling. Not only is she a master of written word, but she is also a location-free entrepreneur living life on her own terms, building businesses from anywhere in the world. Please welcome to the show, Dawn Bates. Dawn, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So last week we were just doing kind of a preliminary call before this. I think we spent like an hour and a half. You met me, the wife, you talked to her a while. We hung out and chat. I mean, it was just such an engaging conversation. It was cool to chat with you. So
yeah, it was. Likewise. Very cool.
So somebody as interesting and fascinating as you, I'd love to hear, what does success mean to you?
I thought I knew until I started diving into the question. Like, you turned it on its head massively. I was like, yeah, well, it's like, because individual is a fingerprint. It's elusive. Is it even real? I was like, oh my gosh, like, where is this going to go? Like, talk about drinking tea with Alice down that rabbit hole. Yeah. I used to think it was just having a great night's sleep, knowing you'd done a good job, knowing you'd been kind, that my grandfather used to say to me, if you can make someone smile during the day, then it's worth waking up. And that was something I've always lived by. But is success, is success even real? Is it just an illusion to us all? Yeah, so I kind of had quite a few pondering moments, shall we say.
Yeah, sure. And I think it probably changes over time, especially for someone like you who's a world traveler, right? I mean, success in your interpretation of it could change as you receive new input from the world that you've explored, right?
Yeah. Is it the fact that I've just climbed, 30 meters up a mast in the middle of the Atlantic and actually not fallen, had jelly legs and gone, yes, boys, mama did it? Or is it the fact that I've not burnt the rice? It's as wide and is it because I've got 22 books? So is it because, I've managed to have a lie-in? What are we making success mean? It's not just the turnover. It's not just the accolades that we win, although they're really quite nice. I'm getting quite a few of those at the moment. But I still keep coming back to the fact that I can go to bed at night and I can sleep because I've been a great person, been a kind human being, and my boys look up to me and go, my mom's a badass.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about your badassery, can we here? So you've sailed 20,000 deep blue ocean miles over the last 7 years.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't include the coastal racing. No.
Okay. So what inspired you to take that? I mean, such a unique path, especially being a mother. I mean, what inspired you to do this?
Oh, trauma. It's like, I can't do this anymore. I went through some really challenging times. I just lived through the Egyptian uprising if we go back a little bit further than that, I had my second child and was incredibly ill. And then I sold my business at that time. And I was like, I just need a time out. We went to live out in Egypt, ended up living through the Egyptian uprising, which was, interesting. I wrote my second book. Well, I wrote my first book in Egypt, and then my second book was about life in Egypt during that time. And then I came back to England. My father-in-law died, got divorced, then got arrested, then had some sexual trauma. And it was just like, you know what, I'm done. I need a time out. Told the boy's dad, right, it's your turn. You've got to step up. You've got to take care of them because I'm going to go sort myself out. The boys and I went on a 5-week holiday to New Zealand. I'd been promising them. And this is the thing. It's like when, you know, we're talking about what is success. It's like when you set your mind to something, like I'm going to go do this. I have no idea how it's going to happen. It's not our job to figure out the how. It's just like, this is what we're going to do. I had no idea how I was going to go to New Zealand, but I'd been promising the boys, we're going to go to New Zealand. We're going to go to New Zealand. See Uncle Tim and Uncle Brendan, and like, you know, we're British. If they're a mother, if they're a friend of your parents, they're either an uncle or an aunt. So they're not like blood brothers or uncles. But my dog, my cleaner at the time had this dog, and she didn't, she just wanted to get rid of it. I was like, you get rid of that dog. And she was gonna dump the dog. So I took the dog, my dog, and this new dog got together, made magic, and then we sold the puppies. Oh, hey presto, we're going to New Zealand. Went out there. I was supposed to go back after 6 months. The boys flew back by themselves to their dad after 5 weeks. I started sailing. I was so not ready to go back after 6 months. And then before I knew it, the boys were flying out to me wherever I worked was in the world, whether that was, you know, the Canary Islands or Brazil or Colombia, or did they come visit me in Colombia? No, I don't think they did. They definitely did in Brazil. And then in Canada. We did Canada as well. I think they've done a few other countries. I can't remember. But yeah, I've got 44 countries under my belt now. But yeah, so. Wow. Good. Yeah. That's languages.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I think is fascinating, especially in this day and age, is people that are living this minimalist lifestyle. Mm. And you've been traveling and living out of a 33-kilogram backpack.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear how that has shaped your perspective on life and in business as well.
People fill their life with stuff. And I remember being in Patagonia and I was moving. I just spent 3 months sailing across the Atlantic. And it was amazing. Amazing. I did things. I was like, I'm jumping off a massive tall 55-meter tall ship into the ocean at the equator. And it was just like too hot on the boat. Let's get in the ocean, middle of the Atlantic at the equator. But when you're traveling, you look at the stuff that you're carrying physically in your backpack and you go, oh my God, the more crap I have with me is more of a representation of how much crap I've got in my life. Sorry if I'm using language that some of your viewers might find offensive. And you kind of just look down at all this stuff that you have. Do I actually really need that? No, not really. Why am I carrying it? And then you start thinking about everything else in your life. Do I really need this many people blowing smoke at my backside? No, not really. Get rid. Do I really need all of these things in life? No, not really. Get rid. And it's not that you're burning big bridges with people. It's just like you become so at ease with who you are. You can become so focused on what your goal is that. And you want this comfortable life, but you still want to put yourself out of your comfort zone and you want to grow as a person. And the more countries I visited, the more dangerous places on the planet I went to, the more government and corporate corruption I investigated, the more languages I learned, and the poverty that I saw and experienced. And I just realized everything we're told about what life is meant to be is just, excuse my language, it's a crock of shit.
Yeah.
because
sales pitch often, right? It's marketing. It's you're being told that you need to buy this, you need to have this. This is the life you need to have, right?
Yeah. Why are we allowing other people to tell us what to do? I'm a grown-ass woman. I don't need anyone to tell me what to do. I can make up my own mind. I don't need a mummy and a daddy, and I certainly don't need a stranger who I've never met before telling me who and what I should be doing, and all these business experts going, oh, you've got to niche down. If I niche down, I'd go crazy.
Yeah.
I can't niche down. Like, what does that even mean? Like, should I become a one? Like, you've got boys. Flat Stanley. Yeah. You know, I don't know if your boys have ever read the Flat Stanley books. Oh, my gosh. Oh, okay. Flat Stanley. You have to, all of you out there.
Is this a British thing? I've never heard of Flat Stanley. I don't know.
I don't know.
You're looking at me like I got a third eye here. Is it a British book?
We all have third eye. Third eye. Like, if you close your eyes and I tell you a story, where are you going to picture it? Here, in your imagination. That's why the Hindu third eye is there. So, I mean, I'm a geek, like proper geek. Yeah. I love it. That's the other great thing about traveling. You get to read a lot and learn about other people. The more you learn about them, the more you learn about yourself, the more you understand where everything we say and think comes from. And then you're just like, oh my gosh, this is just like connecting dots. It's like Lego. It's like a never-ending piece of Lego. But Flat Stanley is this little boy who is so flat that he can be posted anywhere around the world. He can go like under the doors. He can go anywhere. You have to know Flat Stanley. You just your boys will love it. Absolutely. It doesn't matter what age they are. I mean, yeah. There's also Moki Joe, but that's by Peter J. Murray. But we'll digress there.
So I want to hear about your books. First and foremost, what got you started into writing? And then can you tell us a little bit about the kind of diverse topics all over the place, but the 22 books that you've written, everything from, you know, the female side of things to traveling to overall perspective. I'd love to hear just kind of an overview of first, what got you into it? What got you started writing? And then if you can kind of give our listeners and our audience a little perspective on the type of books that you've authored.
Okay. Well, I've always written, always. When I was a kid, it was like writing down all the things I wanted to say to my parents, but really shouldn't really do that, otherwise I'd get really grounded. And then it was writing poetry or how I was feeling and just getting stuff out of my head. And then realizing the more I learned and more I had to write down just to clear my head. And then I remember my first professional piece of writing was when I was working for the Oxford newspaper group, and I was selling ad space, which obviously those of us who have sold ad space, we know that's a sales training program and a half, and especially on a free newspaper. And the copywriter was not there that day, and they needed a piece of copy really urgently. I was like, oh, what is it? Just tell me. And I went, there you go. And it was one of their best pieces of copy they've ever had. And I was like, oh, that's all right. Yeah, I'm quite good at that. And then I started writing magazine articles, being a food critic, because I love food. And I trained as a chef at college and a hotel manager. And so I started writing about that. And then I started writing marketing copy for my clients, because I set up my first business when I was 21. And then my second one, 24, 25. So I was writing a lot of copy for my own business. Then I started writing articles for business magazines and local and regional and national newspapers. So I've always been in and around publishing. And then I remember being at a business event and everyone kept asking me the same questions. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to write a bloody book. And then I'm just going to answer all these questions. And about a year later, this guy goes, did you write that book? I was like, what book? Which book? No, I said, which book? Actually, not what book, which book? He goes, the one you were going to answer all our questions with. I went, oh, no, I've not finished that one yet. He goes, you've not even started it. I went, not yet, but I will do. Give me a year. And then I was like, oh, no, I've done it again. I've given myself another job to do. And that's the thing. That's why I say it's success is an illusion, because sometimes we open this big mouth of ours and we go, yeah, let's do that. Yeah, I'm going to do that. And then you're like, oh, it's out there now. oh, let's just go do it. And when you're in it and you're doing it, you don't really think about it because you're doing the job. You've said you're going to do something, so you better have the integrity to actually do it. That's how I grew up. My mum's like, if those beds, you know, like my mum is that mum. If she says she's going to do something, like throw all your toys or your clothes in the bin because you've not tidied your bedroom, you can guarantee they'll be in the bin. And so I've kind of grown up with that mentality. And so when I was bullied at school, and I hate bullies, and I don't like it when people deceive or upset other people. And I started to see, I was like, well, what am I going to write this book about? And so all these questions that people started were asking me was, what was it like being, because I converted to Islam when I was 15. I walked away from Islam. But it was like, what was it like working with your husband? What was it like, you know, being a raver, you know, going out partying all weekend, going out, waking up Friday morning, going to sleep Sunday night and everything in between. And dance floor marathons to techno and hard house and jungle and drum and bass and all those techno vibes. What was it like doing that? And, you know, wasn't I scared? And how does that impact my business? And, you know, and living with racism and Islamophobia and prejudice and everyone thinking I'm some kind of mindless, empty-headed woman that, you know, oh my goodness, my ex-husband's an Arab, so it must have been him that forced me to become a Muslim. I was like, yeah, no, I was a Muslim before I ever met one. You can thank my religious education teacher for that. And then it was like just unpacking all of this. And the more I questioned, the more answers I got, the more questions I had, the more gaps there were. And that's why I walked away from Islam and why I walked away from organized religion. I was like, I've got faith, I don't have a religion. And so the books have all kind of, if I've seen an injustice, like when I was in Egypt and I wrote the first book, that did quite well, actually. I was quite impressed with that. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not too bad at this. And then I remember the second book, Wallahi, and I say what I called it Wallahi because if you ever meet an Arab and they start a sentence with Wallahi, 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 like Mubarak did when he did his first speech, well, one of his many lie delusional speeches. If an Arab ever starts a sentence with Wallahi or Baghdad, if they're Egyptian, don't believe a word that comes out of their mouth. Because it means like, for seriously, like, you know, like I'm just now going to lie to you. It's like when they say hadra, they don't have any intention of doing what they've just said. And all of my Arab friends and people that have read the book, all these Arabs that have read the book, they've gone, oh my God, the fact that you wrote that at the beginning of the book is
you gave away our secret. Is
that I've given away all their secrets. Honestly, yeah. Like they're like, oh my God, it's like you've seen
into our ruining world. Negotiating for us and everything. Yeah.
I've completely ruined it for them. But that's the kind of thing. It's like, because I've lived in so many cultures and experienced so many things, which a lot of us have, and we don't realize it. And then I started writing about these things. And then when I got arrested in Scotland and the boys were taken off me, I was like, you picked on the wrong mama bear. You really should not have done that. I'm always a police assessor, by the way. I know the law, and I'm going to write about everything that you're doing. So I exposed the police racism and corruption and sexism in Scotland. Got my boys back, and you know they're like, we should never, like the social services, like we should never have taken them. I was like, no, you're not joking. Here's the book. And then I wrote about faith issues and Islamophobia and how the anti-terrorism laws in Britain became the terrorism for British Muslims. I've written about male suicide and men's mental health, women's suicide and women's mental health. I've written about the menopause. But the underlying thing about this is don't listen to government narratives. Stop listening to everybody else. Stop listening to the television, because it's called Tel Avision for a reason. And it is a brainwashing tool if you go back and look at the patent agreements of it. And if you look at the frequency, you'll notice I don't really look at the computer when I'm talking much because of the light rays and the resonance of the light and the sound frequencies. And so like I said, I'm a bit of a nerd. I'm actually quite a lot of a nerd. And if I do something, I want to do it properly and I want to know everything. And this is why I could never go to university, because it's like, oh my gosh. Well, I can't continue studying that until I've learned that. And so I go off down that rabbit hole. I learn that and then I continue what I'm studying. And then I'll go off, and if I get to another bit, I don't really understand what that is, I'll go study that and then I'll come back to it. And I learn really quickly, and learning with a group of other people that are a bit slower than me, I'm like, yeah, you're boring me now, let me move on. And I know that probably sounds really rude and really arrogant, but I love learning. And I have to write, because if I don't write, I think I'd go batshit.
Yeah, well, I've met a lot of entrepreneurs that can't get stuck in traditional education. They've had a problem with that because they felt it just moved too slow. Right. They needed to move quicker. It's like, what's the quickest, you know, from point A to point B? I don't have time to show my work. You know, I just want to get there and go, go, go.
Uh-huh. So, I'm giving you the answer. Let's move on.
Yeah. So shifting subjects a little bit, I want to talk about how you help business leaders turn their personal stories into powerful brand narratives.
Oh, okay. So let's use Al. Okay. So Al is this fabulous gentleman in the States. And he it's Nardo, Umberto Nardalicki. He came to me, he was introduced to me about another book I was writing. And we were just chatting away and going off down lots of different rabbit holes. I mean, we spent 2 hours on our first call together. And he's a veteran, and he is a disabled veteran, and he has this big IT company. And, you know, it's huge in the States. And we were looking about talking about power and how total power corrupts and absolute power and all of that. And it was just, oh, my God, like the layering of fear. And how we get people, and how the governments can layer fear, and how you can get people controlling. And then he was talking to me, and like, this is a lot of stuff. And, you know, and we were looking at how companies grow so big. And he has this passion for this guy called Yasutei, who is the person behind Genghis Khan. But Yasutei's story has never been told. But it was Yasutei's, because he was one of the first identikit people that we know of. And so it was looking at the layering of fear and like how companies and empires are built. And so we've now written, Nardo has written. I have to keep calling him Nardo because that's one of that's the name under the book, which is his real name, but I know him as Al. So what we've done is we've taken what he does with businesses. He's got about 9 of them, I think, and looking at that. And now he's written this creative nonfiction or historical fiction, whichever genre you want to call it. Because there was a lot of data and there's a lot of facts about Yasutei that Nardo found. But because we've had to fill in some of the gaps, we can't call it fact. But it's taken what he's doing and created a work of fiction. And it's just brilliant. Like, it's just, you have to read it. And then you've got people like Beth, who she's got a book coming out shortly called Raising Grit. And it's all about, she was a mental health professional and she was social working. And she wanted to write a book because a lot of her clients were like, you've got to write this down. And she retired, and she's own, I mean, like, she's not that much older than me. I think she's like about 40. Forgive me, Beth, if I'm gonna give away your age a bit too much. She's roughly, we're in her 40s. But she wanted her legacy to live on, so we've written a book where she's like exposing a lot. She's like calling out the wokeness, she's calling out all this liberal parenting, mummy martyrdom, that and how a lot of these systems within our schooling and within the narratives that are pushed out there are really damaging for mental health. She's a brilliant woman, like just brilliant, but she's been off social media. She doesn't like it. So we're now building her up so that once we've actually built her, then like we can get the book, like the book launched as well. And then you've got people such as Lani. Oh, Lani, this little tiny Filipino weightlifter, like strong athlete. I mean, she'd bench press the three of us. You know, like me, you and your wife, like she's like tiny, but she like, and she is a real advocate for women's sports, and she loves strength sports. So what she did is, even though she advocated for women in her job working for this other corporate, she wanted to develop her leadership skills. So she got 9 women together to tell their story about how we can push through mental blockages with sport, and how when you're a strength athlete, it's between you and the bar, it's between you and the dumbbell. And so it was expanded. Now what she's doing is she's commentating. I tune into Instagram and there's Lani doing another like radio show, like hosting another women's strengths event. And you know, she's just growing. She's on podcasts it's stuff like that. I'm like, yes, let's get that juice out of you. Let's find what that passion is, and let's just put it out there.
A lot of people don't realize they have that unique, interesting, fascinating story, right?
That's because they've never met me before.
That's right. All right. So for our audience that's been following you and listening, how do they keep in touch with you? How do they follow what you have going on, your next books, all the other things that you have going on in your life?
Well, I could be so diva-ish. Okay, we'll just put my name into Google, which you could do. But I prefer people to connect with me either on LinkedIn. That's my preferred platform. Or my website. They can contact me directly with any questions that they've got through the dawnbates.com/contact. There it is on the screen. If there's somebody who wants to look at doing a book, then they can book me for 45 minutes for free, and we'll do like an author strategy session and figure out what their story could be. And if a book is the right modality, because everyone might have a story in them, but not everybody has got a book in them. And I say that with all conviction, because there's a lot of, I call Amazon the litter bin of literature, because there really are some books on Amazon that really should not be on sale. And yes, I did say that. Whilst Amazon has given everybody the opportunity to become an author, the problem is that Amazon has given everybody the opportunity to become an author. And literature is really, anyway, Mike, call me a snob, I don't care. I just love proper literature with a capital L. You know, the Jamiroquai song, I love you with a little L, not a... but it's, so if they want to discuss what their book might look like and how they can work with me, then book a session with me at authors.youcanbook.me. Yeah.
That one right there.
Yeah, this one. I've got the glasses on because the light. No, anyway, but yeah, no, I just love it. I love helping people shine. I love people being inspired by themselves and not use. And the other thing is, I don't like them using AI because it robs them of the opportunity to learn about themselves and learn about when they're researching their subject and they start writing it. It aligns all of their values, morals, and ethics. And then
when you get it all down on paper like that, it really organizes it all.
Because you can think something about one thing, and when you've written that same, when you've written about something else that follows the same logic, you go, oh, I've got to let that go. I've got to switch this up a bit. You really get to know yourself when you write a book.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I'd say even if you don't write a book, spend time writing down your story, spend time writing down your thoughts, spend time organizing it,
and yes,
about what you learn about yourself.
Absolutely. Oh, and learning about yourself is not enough people do it.
I agree.
Enough people do it. They don't spend enough time by themselves.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and experience with us today.
We appreciate thank you very much for having me.
To our listeners, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Successes. If today's conversation resonated with you, be sure to connect with Dawn and check out her books, her coaching, or links on the site that we'll have in the comments on this podcast. Until next time, keep striving, keep growing, and remember, success is what you make it. See you next episode.